Now, as we said, David Horasty, and we did have the pronunciation right. There you go. Well done. David Horasty is a senior research scientist based at the Port Stephens Fisheries Institute. He is a marine biologist with over 20 years' experience working on threatened marine species and marine biodiversity. And we welcome him to the program this afternoon. Hello, David. Thank you for your time.
Good afternoon, Brent. Thanks for having me on board.
It's a pleasure. Tell us about this new species of worm you've discovered. And I have here in my notes that it's speedy and that it took over 10 years for all this to happen. Is that right?
It actually took a little bit longer than that. It took about 20 years.
20 years?
Yeah, 20 years. So I first found this new worm species in 2002 here in Nelson Bay.
How did you first find it? Tell us that.
Just diving, and it was actually on a night dive, just off Nelson Bay Main Beach, where everyone goes on their summer holidays and sit back and kicks and relax on the beach. Just out from the shore, in about 1 metre of water, this worm lives in a burrow.
Right.
And at night time, it'd come out to feed, and I'd see this thing come out of its burrow, and I was like, oh, I think that's something I haven't seen before. So I took photos of it, sent the photos off to the Australian worm expert at the Australian Museum, and she wrote back to me, said, I think that's a new species. Can you get me a specimen? I was like, I can try, and it took me 10 years to catch one.
What?
It wasn't until 2011, 2012 where I actually figured out how to do it. So because this worm lives in a burrow, as soon as you approach it, like lightning fast, it goes back down its hole. So right. You couldn't just grab it. And it wasn't until I saw, when I was overseas on a diving trip, I saw some other, there's another worm over there called a bobbit worm. And for photographers to get a photo, a dive guide would entice the worm out with a bit of fish.
Right.
So I thought, right, I'm going to try this. So back then, me and my dive buddy went out and we got a pilchard, just a standard pilchard to put on a fishing hook.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. We dangled it in front of the hole and then we slowly dragged it away. And then the worm would come out. And then one of us was behind the hole and have to grab the worm as quick as it could. Now, we weren't very successful. We must have had at least 100 attempts before we finally got my fingers around one of these worms, and I started pulling it out of the hole, and it kept coming and coming and stretching longer and longer. So it would have been about a metre and a half out of the hole. This great big elastic band was fired into my face, and a worm got wrapped around my regulator. I was blowing bubbles everywhere. I tried not to drown. My dive buddy was useless because he was laughing at me in the predicament that I was in. He was supposed to hand me a bag to put the worm in, and he was just laughing too hard, so I had to grab the bag off him, trying to rest, grab the worm, put it in a bag, and try not to drown.
So how you said you stretched it for about a metre, but when the worm was not stretched, how long was this worm?
Well, I reckon it was stretched out to a metre and a half, maybe 2 metres, because a worm, when we measure it, it's 1.1 metres long.
Wow, that's a big worm.
That is a big worm. It's one of the longest worms in the world, the Unis worm, and its common name is the bobbit worm. And the cool thing about these worms is actually they're quite aggressive. They'll attack fish as they pass their burrow. So they'll feed on, a small galaxid or a small hardyhead fish. So they're quite strong and quite quick as well.
Now, this worm, when you say it's about 1.2 metres in length, how thick is it in diameter?
Not very. So its head and the body size only be about 1 centimetre in diameter.
Compare it to a garden worm. Is it the same circumference, thickness as a garden worm, or a little thicker?
Oh, probably thicker than that. Probably double the size of a garden worm. So
okay.
about a metre in circumference.
Right.
And at the end of its head, it's got these five big tentacles. And that's what makes it look really alien-like and big and ferocious. And it uses those tentacles to latch onto the fish to feed.
Is it poisonous?
No, it's not poisonous. And the reason why it's been undiscovered for so long is that we never knew how to catch it. So the only way you could have actually got one before is if someone had dug up a whole heap of sand and they discovered the worm. Now, that hadn't happened. That's why I was quite fortunate that when I got it, no one else had beaten me to it.
So you've just described the process of catching this worm. What is the process of discovering a new species? I mean, you just basically stumbled across it one afternoon and 10 years later, all of a sudden you're catching this darn worm and it's something that's never been sighted before.
Yeah, and the catching is just the half the process of getting it described. So we had to catch two worms. So whenever a taxonomist wants to describe a species, they always need two specimens. One that they can cut up and do genetics and count fins and count, you know, filaments and stuff. And then the other one is untouched and sits on the shelf, and that's called the holotype. So we had to get two worms. So we got two in the end. And then they sat in the Australian Museum from 2012 to 2020, waiting for the taxonomists to have time to look at it, describe it, and make it a new species.
What? It took 8 years for that process to happen.
It does. Taxonomy is a slow process. And the reason for that is that we have a real shortage of taxonomists in Australia.
Right.
So it takes a long, it can take a long time for a species to be named, be it a marine worm or a nudibranch or a sea slug or something. So that's the sort of standard it is. And it's only when you really have a taxonomist who's got an interest in that specimen or in that area, that subject area such as worms, that you might get lucky that they'll have time to name it.
Did this worm survive out of water, or did it die once you took it out of water, or did you have to keep it in water? I mean, I imagine you didn't keep it for 8 years. Well, they didn't keep it alive.
No, what you need to do is when you collect a specimen, they need to be fixed in a way to preserve the specimen.
Right.
And you generally either fix them in formalin or in ethanol.
Right.
And so once they're fixed, that's it. They're no longer alive, unfortunately.
So what do we learn from these new discoveries of new species?
Well, the really cool thing is, there's so many more marine species out there to be discovered. And with the technology advances with underwater cameras nowadays, it's not uncommon for someone to photograph something that they've never seen before. And, you know, we have a Nelson Bug sea slug census up here this weekend, and they're held every 3 months. And pretty much every sea slug census, someone will photograph a new species of nudibranch that hasn't been recorded before. So there's always new discoveries, and we need to name these species so we know what they are and how to look after them.
How important for you is it to keep discovering these new species, keep looking for these new species in the ocean?
Well, I've been really fortunate. Like, I've slowed down in my looking for species. I don't dive as much anymore as I'm getting old, and it's a lot of dive gear and stuff. So I'm fortunate I've actually had three species named after me, so I can retire happily now. I've got the trifecta. But it's like I was saying, there's up-and-coming, you know, new divers, and they're always finding new things. People will send me a photo or something like that, and if I haven't seen it before, then we send it on a taxonomist, and a taxonomist will get excited and saying, can you get us a specimen of it? And then we go through the right permits to do that, and then next thing you know, we might have a new species described.
Do you have a new species that you end up not having named after you?
The holy grail for me is to get a seahorse named after me. I do a lot of seahorse research, and I have been studying seahorses for 20 years now, and I'd love it if I could just one day discover a new species of seahorse, and that would become Hippocampus harassii. I haven't found it yet. I'm still looking, but it hasn't happened. And honestly, I'd probably trade in my other three species for just the one seahorse species to be named after me.
How many different, you may not know the answer to this question, David, how many different seahorse species do we have now?
There are 47 species of seahorses found around the world.
Right.
And in Australia, we have 18 different species. In Port Stephens, we have two species that are commonly found here, the white seahorse, which is an endangered species, and the pot-bellied seahorse. And then occasionally we have tropical ones that come down on the East Australian Current, and they turn up over summer.
What do you like about a seahorse, apart from the fact that they look beautiful?
Oh, they're a mythical sea creature. And the coolest thing about the seahorse is it's the only animal in the world where it's the male species that gives birth. So the male gets impregnated by the female, and in 3 weeks' time, that male seahorse will pop out anywhere between 100 and 200 babies at a time.
Gosh.
And the other really cool thing about the seahorses and the endangered species that we have here is that they fall in love. So the male and female will partner up over an entire breeding season, and if they're still alive the following breeding season, they'll get back together again. So it's a really beautiful relationship that they have in the underwater world.
How long do they live?
We've had them recorded here in Port Stephens living for up to 8 years in the wild, and that's the longest recorded for any seahorse in the world, So we're quite fortunate here in Port Stephens that we had a really good population of white seahorse, which has slowly been declining over time, and the recent floods that we had sort of magnified their decrease. But hopefully, once the water improves and the habitats recover, the seahorse populations can recover as well.
What are predators of seahorses?
Oh, the nasty octopus.
Right.
Coming onto it, that's a sore topic for me. The octopus that people seem to love, they're one of the most ferocious predators of the seahorses. And what you'll have is octopus will, they can bite the heads off the seahorses, and then you'll have them, you know, slowly eating a seahorse body in their little burrow. And then you have fish species as well. So your red rock cods and your big dusky flatheads. They all like to feed on a seahorse too.
So how big do seahorses grow? Because, you know, I have only seen images of, I suppose, what you would describe as small seahorses. Are there larger versions of seahorses?
There is one really big seahorse, and it's actually found in Australia and New Zealand, and that's the pot-belly seahorse, and it actually grows up to 35 centimetres long.
Right.
So if you stretched out that really long tail of it and measured it to the top of the head, 35 centimetres. But then there's, as you said, there's some really small seahorses. So we have pygmy seahorses found on the Great Barrier Reef that are smaller than the size of your little pinky fingernail. They only grow to about 5 or 6 millimetres long, and they're really hard to spot. And a lot of these pygmy seahorses have only recently been discovered around the world. We recently discovered one in South Africa. We recently discovered a new species in Japan. So there are pygmy seahorses still being discovered. So there's still a little bit of hope for me still.
So what is the official name of your worm?
The worm is, so every species gets a scientific name, and the scientific name is Eunice D. harastii, and its common name is just the Eunice bobbit worm.
Eunice D. harastii.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That is pretty cool.
What would the seahorse be named if you did find that seahorse?
If I was really fortunate, a taxonomist can name the scientific name for species. They can give it whatever name they'd like. Sometimes they name it after the location the species is found. Sometimes they may name it after their mum, their daughter, their child, their dog. If I'm lucky and the taxonomist is kind enough to me, they might name it, give it the last name, so it become Hippocampus harastii.
That'd be cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that, like I said, that would be the holy grail, and I'll trade in my other three species for that one.
Hippocampus?
Hippocampus, as in hippocampus in the brain. Hippocampus harastii.
Harastii.
Yeah.
It's been lovely chatting with you this afternoon. Thank you very much. I hope you get to achieve your goal. If you do, let us know. We'll read about it and we'll talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me this afternoon. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, David. Nice to talk to you, mate.